Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The IATSE deal, potential strike averted, but the confusing vote leaves many asking questions. Workers at Cargill in Canada ready to walk. And today, for National Apprenticeship Week, the sheet metal workers and the plumbers. Welcome to the Wednesday, November 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Mike Harris is going to be our first guest today when he comes to us from the Sheet Metal Workers Union, website sheetmetal-iti.org. And the sheet metal workers are part of SMART. SMART stands for Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transit. They represent about 136,000 members in the sheet metal and related trades. The union has a reputation for providing its signatory partners and customers a professionally trained workforce that strives to always deliver excellence in workmanship, training, skill, integrity, everything that you want, right? SMART strives through its industry's code of excellence to be honest, trustworthy, productive, and reliable. More things that you want, right? So we're going to touch on the trade itself, what sheet metal workers actually do. Also talk about the fact that this is National Apprenticeship Week, and we'll get into the advantages of a registered apprenticeship program and the variety of work within the sheet metal trade. You think of, oh, this is like duct work, HVAC. Well, it goes way beyond that. There's architectural sheet metal, commercial HVAC, residential, refrigeration, testing, adjusting, balancing, welding, roofing. Yeah, there's metal roofs now. Very, very popular. So we'll get into all of that with Mike Harris. Doreen Cannon will be joining us later in the show, and she comes to us from Plumbers Local 55, plumbers55.com, located in Cleveland, Ohio. And she's a longtime member of 55. In fact, she got into the trade because her dad was in the trade. She'll talk about that. She's done that on previous shows here on America's Workforce, and she's going to talk primarily about women in the trades. And as you know, got a long way to go. There are more and more women getting involved in the trades and they're realizing the potential to make money, good pensions, great health care. So we'll touch on that and obviously talk more about National Apprenticeship Week and what she's doing at Local 55. I want to share with you something I picked up yesterday from the U.S. Department of Labor. And they've been doing so much outreach. They've got like well over 800 events happening across the 50 states this week in honor of National Apprenticeship Week, which is the seventh year in a row that the Labor Department has been involved in this. Well, yesterday, they launched an online dialogue with stakeholders to increase access to registered apprenticeships for job seekers in underrepresented communities. How many times have you heard me say getting involved in the trades is a pathway to the middle class? You think about these impoverished areas and how they can just lift themselves up if they got involved in a skill that could potentially make them over six figures. Talk about a game changer, right? Got a comment here from Angela Hanks. She is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Employment and Training. And this is what Angela said yesterday. The U.S. Department of Labor encourages stakeholders to share their ideas and best practices for confronting equity challenges in registered apprenticeships so we can begin to address the occupational segregation and underrepresentation that people have faced for far too long. This dialogue is part of an ongoing discussion that we need to have to help us diversify and expand the apprenticeship system so that employers, labor partners, workers, and students from all communities understand and benefit from registered apprenticeships. Co-hosted by the Department's Employment and Training Administration, Office of Disability Employment Policy, Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, Veterans Employment and Training Service, the Wage and Hour Division, and the Women's Bureau. All those departments will be involved in what I'm talking about. And this discussion is going on right now, and it will continue until November 29th. The online dialogue furthers the department's efforts to promote the value of inclusive apprenticeships for job seekers consistent with the aims of this week, National Apprenticeship Week. And the dialogue will gather ideas for diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And the following themes will be brought up: fostering diversity, equity, inclusion in those apprenticeship programs to increase access by diverse and unrepresented population groups, reduce barriers to entry and success, form partnerships between the government and industry to support diversity, and promoting outreach on advancing diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in registered apprenticeship programs. All good stuff coming from a very progressive labor department, I might add. Now, IATSE. Boy, this is one heck of a story. A potential strike by IATSE, which would have been the largest in this country since 2007, has officially been averted, as below-the-line workers in the television and film industries have ratified the basic agreement and area standards agreement. Now, because IATSE has an electoral college-type voting system where each local gets a certain number of votes based on their membership, and those votes are either all yes or all no, the contracts pass by a relatively clear margin. 349 delegates voting yes, 282 voting no. All right. Now, the popular vote. The majority of voters voted against the basic agreement, the larger of the two contracts, as 49.6% voted yes, 50.4% voted no. The area standards agreement fared a little bit better, 52% of the voters approving the contract, 48% no. The combined popular vote on both contracts was 50.3% yes, 49.7% no. A little confusing. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that are not happy because of this. According to one writer, Alex Press, he writes for the blog Jacobin. Alex said the fact that the basic agreement passed even as the majority of ballots were against it is a worst case scenario for the newly energized membership whose experience of time off from production jobs at the start of the pandemic combined with the tighter labor market to heighten their expectations of what work can and should be. Some of those members will feel the contract was forced on them undemocratically, even as they were ready and willing to go on strike. Now, the union secured a 10-hour turnaround time, meaning that workers will have 10 hours between the ends of their shifts and the start of the next one. However, many rank-and-file members believe 10 hours is just not enough, and they wanted a 12-hour turnaround time. No voters saw the ratification of these contracts as a missed opportunity. I think we're missing an opportunity here because of the Rust incident where IATSE member Hala Hutchins was killed on set after producers repeatedly cut corners on safety. That's the movie that Alex Baldwin was involved in. That investigation is still going on. One commented, if we don't reject and ask for more, like 12-hour turnarounds or additional residuals from screening, we're going to have some problems. So, new contract, but a lot of people not too happy about it. Workers at a major Cargill meatpacking facility, this is in High River, Alberta, have given notice of their plans to strike December 6th, following 2 days of negotiations with the company. According to the workers' union, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 401, around 75% of the plant's 1,400 employees took part in a strike authorization vote last Thursday, with some 97% voting to strike if the union's demands are not met. Much of the labor dispute centers around health and safety concerns in the wake of the pandemic, as around half of the plant's workers fell ill. Three died due to COVID last year. Get this. Around 40% of Canadian beef is processed through Cargill's High River facility, and the strike is expected to generate price increases even as much as the West already is appearing some of the highest meatflation in decades. In the United States, food and energy price hikes last month helped drive the sharpest inflation spike in 31 years. And one more here. The Harvard Graduate Student Union reached an agreement with the university on Monday night on a 4-year tentative agreement that would cover student workers in research and teaching positions. The proposed agreement comes after a 3-day strike last month during Parents' Weekend. The union, which is affiliated with the United Auto Workers, was poised to go on a second strike starting today in response to intimidation during the first strike that the union alleges amounted to an unfair labor practice. The bargaining committee has recommended that all members not withhold labor in light of a tentative agreement, and a vote to officially call off the strike is ongoing. That ratification vote will take place starting tomorrow and should wrap up on November 27th. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, the sheet metal workers talking about National Apprenticeship Week and more.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you could check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation. We'll be checking in with Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation. That'll be tomorrow. Right now, though, let's go to line number one and welcome to the show Mike Harris. Mike is with the Sheet Metal Workers Union. He's at the International Training Institute. And the website, as I mentioned before, is sheetmetal-iti.org. And we're focusing on various trades this week for good reason. It's National Apprenticeship Week. And there is a push by so many, including our federal government, to get more young people, all people, involved in these registered apprenticeship programs, because there's some great career opportunities, and being a sheet metal worker is one of them. Mike Harris, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing good. Thank you for having me on.
You're telling me that you've been in the industry for, 35 years? Your dad was a sheet metal worker. Is that pretty much what prompted you to get involved?
Yep, that is correct. I did, like most people, when you first get out of high school, you know, I was kind of forced, or well, I wasn't forced, but I was encouraged to go to college. So I spent a year in college after high school, but it just wasn't really what I wanted to do. I liked working with my hands. I liked building things, making things. And my father was a sheet metal worker for his whole career. So it seemed like a natural fit. So I went in and started in the trade, and got into the apprenticeship program. And it's kind of just parlayed from there.
Now, you're involved in the International Training Center. How long have you been? How long have you been doing that, Mike?
I've been with the ITI for 16 years. I've been in the administration side of it for about 12. Prior to that, I was a director of training for the state of Indiana, and oversaw five different training centers throughout the state. So I've been in training for probably 25 of my 35 years.
That's a good length of time there. I would imagine, I'd like to, let's talk about this now, because that the training, the apprenticeship program, I'm sure has morphed over the years. And with all the new technologies that are involved, let's zero in on that, because we've got a national audience right now, and there's a lot of people leaving their jobs, as you well know, and they're looking for a better career, and this could be one of them. So talk to me about what the components of the apprenticeship program and how it has changed, because you've been there, you've watched it change. Go ahead.
It definitely has changed over the years, as far as just the not only what we train, but how we train it. You know, with the apprenticeship program, it truly is, and the mantra is always, you know, earn while you learn, because you get into apprenticeship program and you get on the job training and get paid for that. And then you go to school, you know, throughout the 4 or 5 year program at various times. Some places go to school at night. Some people go during the day. It just depends on the geographical location. But the whole thing is you get this education that you really can't get anywhere else, because you get the actual hands-on training, doing the tasks and the jobs that you're going to be doing for the rest of your career. And it costs basically nothing to our members to come through this training. So it's a wonderful opportunity. And I always tell people when they get into our programs too, I mean, it is truly a ticket to the middle class. It's a direct line to the American dream, right? So
yeah.
I can't say enough about it, what it's done for me and in my career. And like I said, when I started my apprenticeship, I wanted to learn a trade, and I did. I never thought I would end up where I'm at, but that's kind of how these jobs and these careers take you, right? There's always a next step if you're willing to take.
You mentioned that you started in college and you decided to get involved in the trades. And I'm reading that many of the courses offered by the International Training Institute are college credited. Can you speak to that? I mean, what are we talking about here? What kind of credits are we talking about? How many credits do you get?
The amount of credits varies a little bit, but our curriculum that we write, which is a kind of a standardized curriculum used throughout the country, we get that accredited and assessed for college credits. And anyone that goes through our programs can apply to get that college credit that's been assessed. But certain locations, like where I'm originally from and where I served my apprenticeship, they actually have some articulation agreements with local community colleges. And when I graduated, I actually received an associate's degree from the college that we were associated with, as well as the my journey person card. So, and that's not uncommon in many, many locations across the United States.
Let's talk about how difficult the program is, or maybe it's not that difficult. I don't know. I'm reading math, problem solving, and I know some people listening right now, oh, man, what do I got to do with math? Is this algebra? Is this geometry? Yeah. I mean, maybe you could get into some of the specifics of the program itself.
Sure, sure. You know, difficulty, I guess, is all in the eye of the beholder, as they say. But I think the thing that the trades do, and our trade especially, is they take some of those things that may be scary, as you said, algebra, trigonometry, there's the big one. We use a lot of that. But we apply that to something that you can see and feel, right, and give it meaning, which we found has really there's people who would have never thought they could have done that type of math. It comes easy to them and natural because they can actually visualize what they're doing and why it applies. And, you know, like I said, with our trade especially, we're one of the few crafts that actually fabricates the products that we install. So we have a whole fabrication side of our industry, as well as a whole installation side of our industry. So there's a lot of different skills that need to be learned. And, you know, math is one of them, but math is kind of a part of a lot of it, but it's not the math that you took in high school, right?
Okay.
So we really apply it to what you're doing every day. And as I said, when you can visualize it and get your hands on it, it starts to make a lot more sense to somebody.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you, because a lot of stuff you learn in school, you say, I'm never going to use this, but when you have your hands there working on something, that and it makes sense, I get that part. What about the success rate? I mean, you have, correct me here, 150 training centers around the country, is that right?
Yeah, we've got 150 training centers throughout the United States, and we got a couple in Canada, but mostly in the United States.
And Mike, how successful are the people going through those apprenticeship programs? I'm sure you tabulate all that stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yes, we have a really pretty good retention rate, and the majority of the people that come into our program are successful in completing the program. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but it's higher than just about a lot of other trades and jobs that I know of. And like I said, I think the whole thing is that the key to it is getting the right person and the right kind of people that really like to, you know, work with their hands, think through things. It's not a mindless job. You know, some people like a mindless, tedious job, but that isn't us, right? We have to think through, we have to problem solve on the fly. We have to use our hands and our brains together. And I think that really engages a lot of people. And quite frankly, you make a good living and a good wage along the way, that doesn't hurt. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of career opportunities. Architectural sheet metal, let's see, HVA service and refrigeration. And when you talk about sheet metal, I said this at the top of the show, you think of ductwork, you know, HVAC. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk more about that, because with this pandemic, that has been changed and revolutionized because of COVID-19. We'll get into that in the next segment. But welding, testing, roofing, I know there's a lot of metal roofs today. So there's a lot of work out there. And that being said, any prognosis here on the need for sheet metal workers down the road? Do you have any data on that?
Well, the outlook for the sheet metal industry is very good. You know, just like everybody, we're coming up against the retirements of people that have been in the trade for a long time. And we're always looking to fill our coffers with the apprenticeship system, which is kind of like a farm system, right? If you're a sports fan, It's where you're going to cultivate the next generation of sheet metal workers. And so we're definitely in demand. We've spent a lot of time and effort, money, and recruitment. And like I said, not just recruiting people, but recruiting the right people.
Right.
Because we don't want to waste their time, and we don't want to waste, you know, our time or money training somebody that isn't going to be a good fit for us. So
yeah,
we spent
yeah.
a lot of time and effort in that, and so far we've been pretty successful throughout the country. So.
Well, as you know, this is National Apprenticeship Week, and I know the trades are doing everything possible. The Labor Department is doing a lot of outreach events. What are the sheet metal workers doing on behalf of National Apprenticeship this week?
Yeah, a lot of our training centers are hosting open houses, and some of them are doing virtual open houses, obviously because of the pandemic, depending on the geographical location, but a lot of them have reached out to their local communities, because the training centers are really the recruitment hubs for us, because that's where the people are located and where the jobs are. So there are local hubs. They've reached out to a lot of vocational schools and things of that nature, and tried to get them to come through and see just what we offer, and you know, the types of facilities that we train in. And there's millions of dollars spent on our side, you know, on training in a year, because quite frankly, we want to be the best at what we do, and it all starts right there in the training center. So.
And there's 150 training centers all across the United States. Mike, I got to take a quick break. You can stay with us. I want to talk about the ventilation and all the changes there. Can we do that next?
Absolutely.
Mike Harris joining us on our live line, coming to us from the Sheet Metal Workers Union and the International Training Institute. Let me give you the website. It's sheetmetal-iti.org. They're also on Facebook, and you can check them out on Twitter. ITI Sheet Metal is their Twitter handle. Doreen Cannon will be joining us on behalf of Plumbers Local 55. She's also going to talk about National Apprenticeship Week and what Local 55 is doing. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, be so kind to give us a rating. Just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and we always appreciate those 5-star ratings. Greatly appreciated, I might add. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line. This is National Apprenticeship Week, so what we've been doing this week is zeroing in on various trades, talking about what they do. And today, it's the sheet metal workers, and Mike Harris is talking to us about the sheet metal apprenticeship program and the International Training Institute at sheetmetal-iti.org. Mike, I want to talk about the various work that's out there. And you know, like I said before, you think about duct work, HVAC. I know that's really, really popular. I want to talk about the ventilation systems that have changed dramatically here ever since the pandemic hit. But what caught my attention is this architectural sheet metal. What's going on there? Can you give us some details on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things that I think really attracted me specifically to the sheet metal industry is the variety of work that's available, right? We've seen a real revival in architectural sheet metal work over the past probably 5 or 6 years, and it's continuing to go on. You know, in the future, we've got a lot of work on the books going forward. But basically, if you think about any kind of a building with a metal facade or some kind of decorative metal on the outside of the building, that's typically done by us. And on the sheet metal side of things, all the way to, you know, building church steeples, copper domed roofs, anything that's really aesthetic to a building that's made of metal is part of our industry. And we train on those specific things. But like I said, we've seen a real revival in it. Some of the old historical buildings now are actually to the point where some of those need to be restored. And it takes a really skilled craftsman to do some of, especially the older work, because you got to make it look like it was old. And, mm-hmm. and you got to do it using kind of the same techniques that were used hundreds of years ago when it was originally designed. So it's a really interesting part of our trade. And really the people are true artisans that do that kind of work. And like I said, that's just one area that we train in to give our members opportunities.
It's funny you bring that up because old is new again. We see that all over with repurposed furniture, you know, furniture that's like right. stressed and old and, you know, and they make it that way now. So it's interesting. And even the clothing, I still can't get over the jeans today that have holes in them. My kids buy them that way. I'm saying, you know what? I used to wear those jeans years ago. And, you know, when they got to that point, I threw them out. But no, you buy them that way. But to your point, that's what's in style now. I mean, just like the all the different ornate metal roofs that's out there. But those skills, I mean, like you mentioned, like some of that work on churches and stuff. When somebody goes through the apprenticeship program at the Sheet Metal Workers Training Center, are they pretty much equipped to do that kind of stuff? Or is that, you know, years later for something like that? I'm sure working with somebody that's been in the field, they would learn even more. But what's the answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, throughout our program, we focus on training them in all the aspects that they may be asked to do, right? And then we offer a series of continuing education classes once they get done, if they really want to hone their skill in on a certain aspect. But as you said, and you know, I spoke earlier too, that a big part of the apprenticeship is the on-the-job training. So while in class, we're going to train them a little bit about everything that they're going to have to know how to do at some point, they're really honing their skills in certain areas when they're doing their on-the-job training. So, and like I said, our trade is very diverse, and we have people that do the artistic type of stuff, like architectural sheet metal, and then, as you mentioned, you know, you think of ductwork, but ductwork is just one component of the whole HVAC system, right? And those mm-hmm. systems have become more and more complex over the years as far as the design of things. I mean, we've been touting clean air and ventilation for years in proper design of the equipment, the duct systems, the controls, things of that nature. But it's really came to the forefront over the last 18, 20 months during COVID, obviously, because now people are realizing that, hey, that system controls a whole lot, and that's a distribution point for error, right? So,
right.
We've really picked up a lot of our training and picked up a lot of work in that particular area, and a lot of the even the stimulus bills through the government that have come out during COVID have put in money towards especially schools to verify their ventilation rates in schools and buildings. So that's a huge point of emphasis for us at the moment, but it has been for years. It's just people now are paying attention to it because of the pandemic.
Sure. Let's tear that apart a little bit, if you don't mind. What have you done? How has ventilation changed here, especially with the pandemic? And what are you doing specifically to keep that air fresher? What's going on in that arena, Mike?
Well, basically what we're doing is, I mean, systems are designed to operate in certain ways, and they're designed to intake certain amounts of ventilation or fresh air into buildings. Well, the problem is over years of use and improper maintenance in some cases, the systems aren't operating exactly like they're supposed to. So what we've been doing is going in and testing the systems, and we've got tools and things where we can test air flows and different things of that nature. But we're taking the readings to see, make sure that people are having proper ventilation brought into their buildings, because a lot of people try to, I won't say circumvent, but they circumvent the system because sometimes bringing in fresh air costs a little more. I know that sounds weird, but if you're in, let's say, the north, and it's snowing, and you're bringing fresh air in, and it's 20 degrees outside, you've got to heat that air, you know, as it comes in. So there's a cost associated to it. But so some people try to tweak that a little bit so they don't have to spend that money. So they're trying to save a little money here or there, but they're really causing the indoor air quality to be affected because they don't have proper ventilation rates coming into their facility. So we're doing a lot of that testing in schools, hospitals, things of that nature, because airflow, fresh air, all that is a part of the overall indoor air quality system, right? It's not just, a lot of people think indoor air quality and they think biological, which is part of it, but the mechanical side of it is just as important, if not more important, than filter medium, UV lighting, things of that nature.
Yeah. So, Mike, I'm wondering how much work is out there with regard to what you just talked about, because I mean, we record this show in Northeast Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, older city. Much of the building that went on here was back in the 20s and 30s. And there's a lot of cities like that. You talk about Chicago, right. Boston, and you know, you look at all these old buildings and you know they need some work. And I'm just wondering, has your union looked into the potential that needs to be addressed down the road? Because I'm thinking there's probably a lot of people that are working in a building as we speak right now that are probably not getting the air they should be getting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only have we looked into it, we're advocates, right? So we're out there beating the drums, and for those that will listen. Now, and obviously, you know, there's cost factors, and people that own those buildings make those decisions, not us. But
sure,
we definitely have tried to, and we've been doing it for a long time. We actually, it was kind of one of those weird timing things, but just prior to the pandemic, one of our sister organizations within the sheet metal industry had just partnered with UC Davis on a white paper on ventilation rates in schools, because we've been advocating for proper ventilation and the effects of it and for years. And like I said, it was kind of just ironic timing that that came out, and then 2 months later we're in a pandemic, right?
Yeah.
So it was. I wish it wasn't timing like that, because I wish we weren't in this pandemic, but we are. And so, like I said, we've been big advocates of it, and we will continue to be advocates of it, but especially in public buildings and schools. And,
sure.
And hospitals, things of that nature. But it all comes down to, you know, everybody's got to make that decision that owns those buildings. But anytime it comes to public safety, we're going to be at the forefront advocating for it.
Well, you're only as good as the food that you eat and the air that you breathe. And hopefully we can move the needle in the right direction on all of that. Well, you know what? You've got an advocate here on America's Workforce. So you let us know what needs to be said and what needs to be done, because the way we look at it here every week is National Apprenticeship Week, you know, because right. we got to get more people involved in fixing America, roads, bridges, ventilation systems, waterways. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done. So you take care, my friend. Stay safe. I know you've been really, really busy this week, so thanks for carving some time out to talk to our listeners here on the show, okay?
I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
You got it. Mike Harris joining us from the Sheet Metal Workers Union. Again, the website, sheetmetal-iti.org. They're also on Facebook as well as on Twitter. Quick break. Doreen Cannon from Plumbers Local 55 coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. Doreen Cannon is her name. She's been on many, many times because they've done these apprenticeship fairs throughout Northeastern Ohio. And this week is the 7th annual National Apprenticeship Week. And today we're going to talk about becoming a plumber. And Doreen is president of Local 55. Plumbers55.com is a website. She's been president for 12 years. And they have about 1,100 members in Northeastern Ohio. Pretty large territory. Lorain, Ohio on the west, all the way to Pennsylvania, and then down to Hudson, which is in northern Summit County. So a lot of territory there. Doreen, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
I'm fine. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
And Tim Coleman from Training 669 at the UA says hello, and he loves you. You've probably been working with him quite a lot, right?
Yes, we were lucky enough to be able to teach a recruitment class together, and we do have a great time, and hi right back at him.
Yeah, he said, you got to tell Doreen hello. I love working with her. She's great. So good stuff. So, you know, this is National Apprenticeship Week. In fact, tomorrow, we're a day early here, Women in Apprenticeship. And the Labor Department is focusing on different things each day. And they've got a lot of events happening all through the country, well over 800 events, proclamations, and we're talking in all 50 states, territories, the District of Columbia. Well, let's talk about Local 55. What's the game plan for this week, Doreen?
Well, we're just doing a lot of social media outreach, you know, kind of acknowledging all the amazing Cleveland tradeswomen in the apprenticeship programs. And Cleveland Tradeswomen Committee has some things planned for next month, our annual get-together. So we'll be even acknowledging them there.
Do you see some effect here when you do this reach out, or is it coming? Is it in a delayed type of situation? I mean, there's a lot. And Doreen, you know, a lot of people are fed up with their jobs, especially if they're so-called essential workers and they're not getting paid as such. I'm just wondering, are we seeing a shift here into the trades, especially Plumbers Local 55? What's your answer to that?
Yes, I think so. And I think we're seeing more and more women. It was funny because I was thinking yesterday that when I got in about 22, 23 years ago, I think the national average for women in the trade was right around 2%. And now Department of Labor just came out with new numbers, and it looks like it's pretty close to 4%. So the percentage is still small, but we've made a pretty good increase there, almost doubled.
And what do you attribute that to? Is that part of the outreach then?
Absolutely. And I think I'm sure social media has had a lot to do with it too, right? Because the problem with trying to get women into these careers in the trades is that they don't think about it as an option for a career for themselves. Because the numbers are so small, there's not a lot of women. I mean, how often do you see a woman when you drive by a construction site? Maybe you'll see them as right. a flagger on the street, but you just don't, so they're not visible. So people don't even think of that could be a career for them as a female. So I think as social media kicked in and we see it a lot more, they say if you don't see it, you can't be it, right? So we're starting to see an increase in women approaching other tradeswomen and saying, hey, how did you do this? How's it working for you? Is this an option for me? I don't have a background in that. Am I still able to get into an apprenticeship program and do this? And the answer is absolutely yes.
And Doreen, there's got to be, there's a stigma in there because this is traditionally a male type of job. Okay, if it's 4% women, I guess that means 96% men. And you got a woman thinking, oh, my God, I can't walk into something like that. And then there's all kind of intimidation. There might be harassment. And they don't want to deal with it. Can you address that for our listeners?
Well, yeah, I think that's true. And part of the stigma, as you mentioned, there is a stigma about it, is, you know, from years ago when, you know, people walking down the street, ladies walking down the street, and who's whistling at them? The construction workers. And that obviously has changed over the years. And not even just the stigma as far as male-females goes, but in general, the stigma that if you're not going to college and you were bad in school and you can't do anything else, then go into construction. Well, that's not true, because the schooling in these registered apprenticeship programs in the Cleveland area that are no cost to anyone, it's a career, you're earning college credits, that apprenticeship program is not easy. We're not looking for people who didn't like school. We're looking for people who will make a commitment to do what's required of them to complete this apprenticeship, to get all the certifications they knew, and make an amazing career for themselves. Women, I think it has changed over the years, that because there's now getting to be more women, the more women we get on the construction sites, the less of that kind of stigma is still around.
If you can you speak to how the apprenticeship program has changed? In fact, we just got off the line with Mike Harris at the Sheet Metal Workers, and we're talking about college credits. I mean, these apprenticeship programs, you can walk out with pretty much an associate's degree, which would be like going to a community college. So obviously, the program itself has matured and advanced. Can you give us some details on that? Because it's not what it was like, say, in the 70s or 80s. Can we talk about that?
No, and it's not even what it was when I was in 23 years ago. I mean, it really is. It's, you know, I'm the instructor down here also, and I mean, I have to have a lesson plan for the whole year. My training director expects this to be covered every year. Then we cover this, then we move on, and as we move through the apprenticeship program, we build on what they learned the year before. So I always tell the apprentices, don't, right from the beginning, don't, if you're struggling with what you're learning in the first year, you're going to get yourself in trouble, because what we're going to learn next year also includes the first year, and so on. And it's a, there's homework. They have homework every week. We have testing every week. And this is only in the classroom part. When we are in school, we're in the class for 4 hours, and then they're in the shop for 4 hours. So we try to supplement, because not, they can't get all the training, even though 90% of their training comes on the job. Some of the jobs they get on, they don't have access to, they're not installing certain systems. So we supplement that here at the training center in the shop for 4 hours every time they're in school also. So it's, like I said, it's not easy. It is not an easy program. And it shouldn't be, right? Because they're learning right. college credits, and it should be almost at the level of an, you know, your beginning college classes.
The people that are attracted to plumbers 55, and I'm just wondering what kind of success rate you have. I'm sure you got to vet them out. There's some people that just shouldn't be involved. I get that part, but the ones that come in, you talk to. How are they panning out over the duration of that apprenticeship program?
Really good, because we started a few years ago here at Plumbers Local 55, what we call a boot camp week or a preparation week. So when they first get accepted into the program, we bring them in for a 40-hour week. We teach them a lot of math, the kind of math the plumbers use out in the field. We do a lot of shop projects with them. They have to be here on time. They can't be late. They have to complete their homework every night. So it's kind of a little taste of the apprenticeship program. And I think that has really helped, because I think a lot of times people get into a trade and they really don't understand what it all involves. I always laugh because, you know, people say, oh, you're a plumber. And I say, hey, the only place I've ever plunged my toilet's been my own house. That's not even close to what plumbers do 90% of the time. So having that preparation week has been a boost for us. We're seeing more and more stay in after that preparation week, because I think they've gotten a taste of what it's really going to be like.
Doreen, just a couple minutes left here. Okay, it's more than plunging a toilet. Maybe you can address that. What kind of jobs plumbers do today?
Yeah, so I don't think people realize, but obviously we do all the potable water, which is water for human consumption. And we always say plumbers protect the health of the nation, right? That's kind of our motto. And we do. We bring that clean water into homes. And obviously then we remove everything out. People don't realize we do all the gas lines, natural gas lines, so to your furnace, to heat the building. We also do, and the biggest thing, and one of our biggest certifications, and one of the hardest certifications to get, is medical gas lines. So I don't think people realize that plumbers do all the work in hospitals. If you've ever been in a hospital and you put an oxygen mask on your face, that is all piping done by plumbers. And it's an interesting kind of system, because it's so different than anything else, and the standards are so high for it, because obviously you're dealing with people's health. So that's one of the systems that I think people are surprised to learn that the plumbers do. And here in Cleveland, that's a big part of our work, because we have such amazing hospitals in Cleveland, and the hospital system is so large here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, with the Cleveland Clinic and UH, and then you have Metro. Yeah, there's a lot of jobs in healthcare, and a lot of gas lines, no doubt about that, and that's where Plumbers 55 comes in. Great job. I'm going to let you go. I know you're busy doing the outreach. Continued success to Plumbers 55. Hopefully you'll attract more, especially females. We want to attract as many people as possible, but you're doing a pretty good job in boosting those numbers up. So you take care, stay safe, and stay in touch, okay?
Thank you. Till next time.
Doreen Cannon, President, Plumbers Local 55, plumbers55.com. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, The Nation Magazine, we're going to zero in on the John Deere strike by the UAW and the latest from the North Coast Area Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.